accession number 24192, reel 14.
Mr. Taylor, reel 14. Now, that's about it for Cyprus, but what was your next posting? Because you left the battalion then, didn't you, for a while?
Next posting was battalion barracks, recruit trainee, instructor.
Now, how did that come about? Had you asked for that, or was this just a part of the normal routine?
No, this is just part of the normal routine. So I arrived. Well, I came on leave and had my leave first, and then went to. Well, I got married as well at that time.
And this had been
1955, 56.
That's when you came back?
Yeah. Yeah. Went to the depot. I took over from Paul Garman, who was on that that list. He was. He'd been there since as a recruit, I think, if he stopped the sergeant. Depot.
Now, what was the setup at the depot?
As regards just accommodation,
how many were there, and what, you know, how many of the instructing staff were, and how were the recruits organised at the time?
All the platoons were named after VC winners, like Christoph Bates, and people like that. Each platoon had the names of the VC's winners. You had, at one time, you normally had four platoons of recruits in at one time. You were normally in for 6 weeks at the time. I think it changed slightly after I left. Each platoon had a platoon sergeant, platoon commander. You had the corporals, two corporals, and a lance corporal. Lance corporal used to sleep with the men. These barrack rooms were exactly the same as when I was a recruit. It hadn't changed any at all. The buildings were exactly the same, the training area was exactly the same.
Were these recruits, were they National Service?
All National Service. Well, were the odd regular coming in with them.
What was the recruit training? You had them for 6 weeks, and you were a sergeant of one of the platoons. Do you know which one it was?
Oh, it was Bates platoon.
And do you remember how the program was organised as an instructor? I mean, you know, from the different.
The training program. Training program was normally it changed slightly, but first thing in the morning, the muster parade. That was done by the RSM. In that case was Mr. Fitt, and he would do the inspections. Not every day, but just to make sure that he would wander around and tell us to carry on. Possibly PE, or PT as they called it then, period of PT, maybe a lecture, followed a lecture by the platoon commander, or films of something, hygiene film and this sort of thing. Then probably drill. It used to work roughly so you could, so you had your drill, then they could change for lunchtime. That was the way, to change over lunchtime, and then you had your weapon training after lunch, because normally your drill was done in your battle dress initially. And then you had your weapon training period. That was probably normally a double period, so depending on what you were teaching at the time. It was mainly the first week was sort of taken up with drill, a bit of drill, PE, this sort of thing. You never got onto weapons until about the second week, beginning of the second week. Taught them rifle, Bren, Sterling. Well, Sterling. We had a Sterling there at the time. How to, when they first came, of course, you had to show how the beds would be made each morning, and that was quite easy. I knew how to do that. With your hospital corners and your kit layout, your and what you wanted every morning, and what the team commander wanted every day. We did the inspection. That was carried out before the muster parade. And you then you had to march them for meals initially. Nice fork and spoon and mug in left hand and swing your right arm. That sort of set up. And from there, it was the training program was virtually the same all the way through. All through and you progressed as you went, of course, with your drill. And
I mean, people talk a lot about bull and drill instructors and the rest of it. And how did you treat the young lad? And how strict were you? And what standards of bull or spit and polish, whatever you want to call it, did you go?
Well, I liked them to get to the highest standard of dress, the press battle dress pressed correctly. I mean, they were shown how to do it, how to press it, and how it should be pressed. Boots, highly polished. As far as possible. Discipline, I liked them to be fairly disciplined. I wasn't one for sort of shouting and throwing them around the rooms and this sort of thing, but all the kit. But I think they all always appreciate it. I think you got as much out of them by doing that as you did by shouting and screaming and throwing the kit around and this sort of thing. I always found anyway. So, as I said, I think they appreciated it as much, and I got as much out of them. They always came out fairly well. And
were the levels of spit and polish, were they reasonable? Or, you know, there's sort of different levels of spit and polish. And it sounds
I don't know whether you watch that programme on television. That's a long back. I mean, we had nothing like that. That was way above what I think they've been talking to too many experts in the field, like film stars and that sort of thing, who did the National Service. But there was fairly high degree of spit and polish. And the cleanliness of rooms and bumping the floors and polishing the floors and all this sort of thing. Cleaning the old coal scuttle and making sure the stove was cleaned and all this sort of thing. Clothing and uniforms, always well pressed and looked after, hanging them up.
It sounds more sensible than ridiculous levels.
Well, I'd see no reason for that, really. See no reason for that at all. Because, as I said, you can get as much out of people by talking to them, telling them where they've gone wrong, this sort of thing, initially. I mean, if they did it constantly, then they might have problems.
Well, then you'd shout at
then,
them.
Then you'd shout at them.
But it sounds like you didn't believe much in shouting and swearing generally. I'm not sure whether many instructors swore.
They do, yeah. Well, you had your moments. But, I didn't believe in that at all, really. I'm not one to go around swearing. And
would you use? I mean, they've got some, you know, traditional instructors' jokes about. You know, I mean, would you use any of them?
Sort of things like you're sort of thicker than the RSM's wallet and this sort of thing. You know, that's this sort of thing. And forget what they were now. But you always come up with something which is a bit silly. You get a grin from them anyway. Pretty good. We always had a. They always seemed to do fairly well, drill wise. We had your drill competitions and your shooting.
Can you talk about the competitive element? Because there was a competitive element. I mean, did you try and get your platoon to be the best of the four?
Yeah, it's all the time. All the time. Yeah.
And do you think that was good, or do you think it worked?
I think it, yes.
To raise standards.
I think it did. Oh, yes. Yeah, I think it did. I think it did. They were always talking about it. It seemed to me that they were always talking about the competition. Well, so-and-so platoon did this and so-and-so platoon did that. We can do it better than that. This sort of thing.
And that would come from the recruits?
Yeah, come from themselves.
So what competitions do you have? You mentioned the drill.
We have a drill competition.
What was that? What was the drill? What did they have to do?
All the movements with the rifle, the drill movements, the slope, the order, changing arms on the march and all this sort of thing. Generally, the whole setup of drill, the turns, left turn, about turns, right turns, and this sort of thing, all judged by the company commander or probably the CO of the depot and the RSM. And it always came Always done reasonably well, all the time.
And the other one was, you mentioned rifle?
You went on the range, 30-yard range, and then you went on to the larger range. We're firing back sort of 300-400 yards. And all the scores were accumulated, and that was the sort of that was the competition. How it worked out.
Any other competitions or?
I think the PTIs used to like have a competition between platoons, and I didn't have much to do with that actually. We used to have the weapon, like stripping the weapon down, the LMGs, and that sort of thing, rifles and that sort of competition, the sort of friendly things within with the other platoons. Used to work with between the two sergeants, really. If they had a weapon training period at the same time as me, we'd probably have a little bit of fun for 10 minutes or something, and just to get things moving a little bit away from the normal sort of down and load and all that sort of thing. And that was used to work pretty well.
Now, how did you get on with the key personnel, the RSM? I presume you had a fair amount to do with Fit then, if he was RSM. You mentioned him before, but...
Funny, we didn't see a great... Never saw a great deal of him. You know, you saw him in the mornings when he... The mornings that he did, which probably a couple of times a week, he did the inspection of the musters. But he really didn't have a lot of... Except for the drill competitions, and probably when he was doing the drill, teaching them the drill, he'd probably make an appearance. It saw him in the officer's mess, sergeant's mess, when you were on mess meetings and this sort of thing, or an evening. But other than that, you never saw much of him.
And what about the colonel at the time? Or the was that Dylan, or who was there at the time?
Dylan was there.
That's Brian Dylan.
Brian Dylan.
What was he like then? Was he a major then?
He was a major, yeah. Yeah.
Was he commander of the depot as a major, or was he just senior staff?
Yeah, he was in command of the depot, yeah.
And what was he like? Because he was quite an unusual officer, I think. He didn't have the normal career.
He always seemed in the picture, so to speak, knowing what was happening and who was doing what and who should have been doing what. He always seemed reasonable to everybody, certainly to me anyway. I never had any problems.
Any other senior officers, or did you have any other?
Well, as I said, we're talking about Creasy, of course.
He was there as well.
I can't remember who the company commander was at the time. Of course, Creasy came as a training officer.
What was he like as training officer, Tim Creasy?
He's good all round, actually. I like Creasy. He was a soldier, really, I think.
What did he bring to training, officer? Did he have a more of an imaginative approach, or was it just that he was good at it?
Yes, he did, yeah. He changed things.
What sort of
pamphlet-wise, the drill, he brought in some more tactics, teaching them tactics and more map reading, rather than more drill sort of thing. He liked to get them on the range. He liked shooting. He was the sort of guy who was there all the time. Anything you wanted or anything you needed or talked to, and you could go to him and talk to him about it and say what you thought, and he wouldn't always agree, but he would. Explain and then put you right on several things. More often than not, he'd put you right on several things. but you always knew where you stood with him. This is the thing. If you did everything right, then you had no problems at all.
And who was your company officer? Did you have a company officer? Was
I can't remember who the platoon commander was at the time. I had
Dylan would effectively be the company.
We had several. The trouble is with the platoon commanders, they came and went fairly quickly.
Now, can I ask about discipline amongst the recruits? because, you know, all this publicity about then about Teddy Boys and all that, and rebellious youth.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them came in like that. Oh, yeah.
Could you talk to me about how you took in somebody who was supposedly like a Teddy Boy?
Well,
would they be identifiably Teddy Boys when they
were? Oh, yeah, they come in with the old blue suede shoes and all the rest of it, yeah, and the Teddy Boy suits. And they'd come in. It always appeared to me that they knew they'd got to do the 2 years. You always had one or two who were a bit whinging at the time, initially. But after you sort of got into the squad and got to know people, it's a bit strange because you were putting sort of 20 or 30 people together, young guys together at one time. It was fairly difficult for them, I think, initially, till they got to know one another. You always got homesickness and this sort of thing. Once you took them around to the barber shop and everybody had the same haircut.
Did the Teddy Boys
want? Yeah, they did. Yeah. Whoops. We're gonna start. The barber says, "Let's start at the front and work to the back." They did whinge a little bit. But as I said, everybody had the same, so they were quite happy. Well, I always thought they were anyway. Didn't moan to me too much about it. And because the kitting out was a problem, and showing them how to put the anklets on and this sort of thing, and how to. Some of them still came in with a back to front, but
there was no sort of rebel without a cause. I mean, they didn't. None of them stuck to being a rebel. That you remember?
I can't remember that ever happening. I had one who had to leave.
Why?
I think I don't know whether he went out of the army, but he certainly left me anyway. And he was a depressive. He's sort of got to the point of drinking brasso and this sort of thing. I think he's trying to work his ticket. So I finally, I think he went to, I think the mental hospital was at Southampton somewhere at that time. I think he finished up in there and probably got discharged.
But most of the so-called Teddy Boys, or whatever, they were called Teddy Boys, most of them just knuckled under, as far as you were concerned.
Yeah. Some of them very good in the end, better than the others. You know, the sort of steady guys, but not Teddy Boys. A lot of blarney, really, wasn't it? Really for them. But once they got settled in and everything was going all right for them, and they seemed to work all right. I can't remember any problems at all.
Now, while you were there, were there any rumours as to what would happen to the Norfolks? Because, I mean, it didn't happen then, I don't think, but it did, you know, things were moving beneath your feet in a way.
I knew that we were an amalgamate before. I went back, I left the depot in 58, getting in 58, and went back to join a battalion.
Now, before you went, what did you hear about amalgamation, and what did you feel about it?
Well, I thought that would be... I felt sad, really, that the... It was finished, but by the same token, I knew that we were going to amalgamate with the Suffolks. But I knew a lot of the guys in the Suffolks, and so did a lot of other senior NCOs, because being at the Britannia Barracks, we used to go to Barracks St Edmunds, to their depot, to their mess. We met them over there, they'd come to our mess. So when we finally amalgamated, We sort of, it was like going back to the old mess again. And it was a very good amalgamation.
The first amalgamation was going to be just with the Suffolks, not with any of the other units.
That's right,
there were lots of other amalgamations. But And the main reason you didn't like it, mind it, rather, was that it was with the Suffolks.
Well, because the fact that the guys, the soldiers themselves, knew a lot of the... Because they all come from the same sort of area. In fact, some of them even come from the same town. Well, one was in the Suffolks and one was in the Norfolks.
Was there any objections? You didn't mind, but did some of the...
I don't think we had any objections whatsoever. I think probably out of the Anglian set-up with the Beds and Hearts in Essex, who amalgamated. Beds and Hearts in Essex. There was the other one, North... there was one other...
Because this was what was being formed was the East Anglian Regiment, and you were going to be the
first
battalion.
First battalion.
You and the Suffolks were the first battalion.
Yeah, because we were the senior regiments before. See, we were 9th a foot, and the Suffolks were 12th a foot. So we were the senior the two senior battalions in the East Anglian, set up East Anglian Brigade. I was quite happy with it, actually, and I think a lot of the other people were.
Now, just another question. You got married and started, I mean, were you starting to run out of steam as a soldier, do you think? I mean, do you know what I mean? I mean, were you starting to settle down and look to coming out of the army, or were you still committed to your career?
Yeah. I was still committed, yeah.
So, you know, there was no thought that you'd only got a couple of years to go at the time?
No.
Now, anything else happened while you were in the at Britannia Barracks? There, 2 years.
Nothing. The amount of people that the recruits were coming at the time was like a sort of a treadmill. Coming in and sort of like, it's like a. There was, I can't remember how many we used to do in a year, but quite a lot.
6 week courses.
6 week courses.
And that's all. You didn't do anything else.
We didn't do anything else. That was all we did was the training of the recruits.
So what happened when you were posted back? What were you posted back as?
I went back to platoon sergeant in B Company again with Creasy as company commander.
Now, was this, had they actually changed over yet? Or
no, they hadn't. No. I took a draft of recruits back to battalion when I went. I think probably about 50 odd took back with the battalion. And I went initially to the training company in the battalion. And then the CEO, not the CEO, he wasn't CEO then, Creasy said, told me one day, and he said, you're coming to my company. I said, all right, sir. And that was a couple of days later, it was on orders that I'd be posted to B Company. So I went to B Company.
So you were only in the training company
Only a couple of short time.
Now, where were the Norfolks?
Iserlohn.
How do you spell that, sorry?
Iserlohn.
And that was that a barracks or a camp?
Yeah, it was the old German barracks. Big barracks.
Where is it near?
It's not far from Dusseldorf, actually. It's sort of the other side of Dusseldorf, as opposed to Slesvig Barracks, where we arrived from Berlin before we went to Korea. And
you got back in 58. What time of the year?
I think it was May 58, something like that, when I went back.
And how had the unit changed at all? I mean, I doubt it, in that you'd been away about a year and a half, 2 years, whatever.
No, it hadn't changed that much. One or two people had left. You changed around because you had people going to the TA as PTIs, PSIs, people going to other jobs, and other people coming back. So it was virtually the same, actually. The main people were still there anyway. And as I said, I went to B Company, starting at on exercises and this sort of thing again. And then I was sent on a drill course to Pirbright.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Okay. bull, drill, and more bull.
That's with
the guards depot. It was the guards depot then, but the Royal Anglian are in there now, at the moment. We had in the rooms themselves. We had a room of what I think it was probably 10 to a room, from all units, different units, and some overseas soldiers as well. Scrubbing the floor. They had benches in there which were white, and you had to scrub them every week. I mean, if you showed them the scrubbing brush, they'd come up white. Just sort of, they'd been scrubbed so many times, you know, this sort of thing. I think in the main that some of the people on the course, the students on the course, were smarter than the guards anyway. What I remember is the main thing I remember is the camp. They used to take you around the camp and show you different points. But they'd march you around at about 160 to the minute and said, look to your right and there's the church, look to your left and there's the shop. And but by the time that you were past it, this sort of thing, you know, you're going so fast. This is typical of the guards set up.
Sounds like you didn't have an awful lot of time.
No, I didn't. I really. I came out all right. I had a good good report.
Do you think it improved your drill? Or?
I think you learned one or two things. One or two things which...
what kind of thing?
Different ways of... you still had the... we have the SLR then, I think. Right? They had different ways of shouldering arms and this sort of thing as regards to making noise. Different ways of stamping your feet and this sort of thing, the guards' way of doing it. But... it does. It sort of gives you that just a little bit of edge by doing that course on everything. Your turns, your dress, the bull side of it is a little bit more as well. But it does give you that little bit of edge over everybody else who hasn't been there. If you can understand what I mean. And we came back and.
Now, we mentioned one thing, the self-loading rifle, SLR. When did that come in? Had that come in while you were at the Britannia Barracks?
I'm trying to think. No, it hadn't. I'm trying to think when it did come in actually.
While you were in Germany,
then? I
can't
remember. I think it was
what did you think of the SLR? Can you take me through what it was like as a weapon and how it compared with the Lee Enfield, which had been the standard rifle for 50 years?
Yeah. Well, there's quite a lot to it, more to it, as far as stripping it down and this sort of thing, keeping it clean. The weight, I liked it actually. I was saying to myself, I was always a good shot. I mean, I've been in shooting teams and all these sort of things for the battalion. I liked it once you got it set up.
What do you mean by set up?
The sighting. The weight, your own feel of it. You could pick a rifle up and your own rifle up, and you know it's yours. If you pick somebody else's up and say, that's not mine, that's mine.
How would you adjust the weight? I can understand the sighting, you know, that's to compensate for anything you do wrong.
When I say the weight, I mean the sort of the positions that you can get into, as opposed to with your Lee Enfield, you had your left arm forward onto the sling swivel at the far end. Well, this one, it had more of a grip. Better, you could get a better grip on it. Because you had the shaped woodwork on it, which gave you a better grip on it. And the working parts were made more better because you didn't have the old bolt action.
It was self-loaded. I mean,
self-loading, yeah.
How many rounds did it take?
You could, magazine of 10.
So no more than the Lee Enfield,
no,
in a way.
That's right, yeah.
But there was no bolt action?
No bolt action, no.
Was it as accurate as a Lee Enfield? Because people said if you got a good Lee Enfield, it was really accurate.
Lee Enfields were very, very accurate, I thought.
What about the SLR?
Yeah, I think the SLR were too, yeah. Once you got it sighted up and used it, the same rifle all the time, it was. And that's... providing you kept it clean and the working parts cleaned and oiled and everything. When you were using it out in sort of crappy conditions, you had no problem.
So how was it better? Was it just the self-loading part or...?
I think probably the self-loading part.
And the grip, you mentioned?
The grip.